Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over!
All right, Playtesty episode 324. We're back again on a Monday. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. Find us on the socials at Playtesty on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And I'm going to start it out with this. If we, the three of us, were on a plane, I'm in the middle seat. Which one of you guys has the aisle? Which one of you guys has the middle? By the way, Sammy aisle. Here, Pat's here, Joe's producing, Gordo here. Sammy, you think you're the aisle?
Aisle, dude. I have the most restless legs. I need to be able to stretch out at least one leg and then get up and walk around whenever I please. I can't do anything other than aisle.
Sammy, I mean like in this podcast, right here.
I'm the aisle seat.
You are the aisle.
Watch, I can just leave.
Pat, can you leave?
No.
No? Okay, so Pat's the window.
But on a real plane, I would also take the window because for me, my superpower is sleeping on planes. I can do it no problem. Like I went to the Dominican 2 years ago. I fell asleep on the tarmac and had to get woken up at Logan. Like
oh, those are the best.
I'm so jealous. Yeah. I don't think I've ever slept for more than 45 to an hour on a plane. I just can't do it.
I went to Portugal in May. That's like a 7-hour flight. I stayed up for like an hour to eat because they serve a meal. And then I woke up. I fell asleep after that. And then I woke up and there was 32 minutes left in the flight.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I wish I could do that.
I'm very good at falling asleep on planes, but I usually hit a cap. So like outside of when I'm like actively trying to tire myself out and like takes like sleeping stuff, like when I was on the long flights this winter, like those aside, like usually it's I'll fall asleep and I can usually max out at about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, and then I'm done.
Well, good thing the flight to Fort Myers isn't too bad.
Exactly. Can't wait. Less than a month for us. Always the best time of the year is when you go to Fort Myers and then you get the last little bits of spring training, you come back and the season like immediately starts. That's the best.
The best, Jerry. Oh my God, Gordo with a pop culture reference, kind of an older one, but still, that's impressive.
Banya.
Wow. I'm so impressed.
Wow.
All right. We ended last pod by saying that we intended to talk a little bit about Tristan Casas and didn't have time to do it. So I want to start off with the Tristan Casas discussion. And we talked about it a little bit, Sammy, Rob, and I, on the radio this morning on Baseballs and Boring. You can catch that every Sunday, 10 to 1. We'll be there. But we talked a little bit about Tristan Casas. There were callers who called in, and you know, people see him. I mean, to be quite frank, I'll tweet anything about Tristan Casas. It could be a picture of him like with painted nails, or it could be a picture of him hitting a double. And it doesn't matter what it is. People will get mad and say the Red Sox should cut him, DFA him, trade him for nothing, get him out of here, whatever. And he's such a polarizing figure. And Rob's right. Rob pointed out that like in the last almost year, because he's been rehabbing, he's been away, we haven't really seen much of him. You almost forgot about that. But you also almost forget that this guy is a guy that up until the injury was someone that we all had super high expectations for at the plate. And now you look at him going into the season, it's like what role is he going to have on this season with the guys that they have on the roster? You know, he's one of the best potential power bats they have in the organization right now. But how can he even find his way into the lineup? Like, it's going to be really interesting. I know they're slow playing him. He's not going to necessarily be ready for opening day. But you know, the way he looks, especially according to people there, Rob tells us all the time, like, he looks like he could go. So It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, he looks good. Those videos that Rob's been posting of him doing defensive drills at first base, he looks agile. As agile as Tristan Casas can be, he's never been a fleet of foot kind of guy. But to answer the question, I don't think there is a spot for him. You finally have a solidified first baseman, Wilson Contreras. That's great. And in the DH spot, it's probably going to be a rotation of Duran and Roman Anthony. sharing DH and left field. And then the backup is Yoshida, who's still around. So there's two guys in front of Tristan Casas. Now, the good thing, if you want to call it a good thing, is he probably won't be ready to start the season in the big leagues. Probably going to start in AAA. So the Red Sox do have some time to figure out this logjam. But then again, this is a logjam that we've been talking about literally for 2 years now. So I'm not super confident they're going to figure it out in the first, you know, month or so of the season. So that's my answer. I don't think there is a spot for Tristan Casas on the big league roster, and I'm not happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, you think back a year ago today. This is a guy who we were penciling in as the four-hole hitter with probably 30 home run potential. So he's a year older. Yeah, he's coming off of injury, obviously, but like the potential is obviously still there. So when it comes to Tristan, like Sammy said, I don't think he's healthy to start the year. He'll get some reps in AAA. But if he's hitting in AAA, I mean, their hand might be forced, whether it be trading Duran, DFAing Yoshida. Because if that's because they need power so badly in this lineup. So that being said, if Tristan's hitting the cover off the ball in AAA, he's still young. He's still under team control. He's still on a rookie deal. Duran is the obvious trade chip. Should have, in my opinion, been traded already. But if Tristan is forcing their hand, it's not the end of the world. It's a good thing because then you're trading Duran, you're getting capital somewhere else. Maybe it's DFAing Yoshida. But on paper right now, there is not a spot. But I think there's absolutely an avenue where he forces his way into this lineup.
The thing is, like, we always talk about these log jams, and oftentimes they clear themselves up. With the outfield trade, I was very much of the opinion that they needed to clear out that logjam going into the offseason and pretty much throughout the offseason. My tune on it changed when instead of getting a bat first guy for the infield, they got Caleb Durbin. He's a good player, don't get me wrong, but it's not, you know, the Alex Bregman, Isak Paredes kind of middle of the order guy that you can count on for minimum 20 home runs. Like he's a good baseball player, but that's not the profile that he is. So right now, most of your offense is coming from outfield, DH, first base, which like, unfortunately, like these guys that you've got crowding up the bench, the minors, whatever, if you want to talk Casas, Campbell, Yoshida, like these are either DH, outfield, first base types. Like you don't have guys waiting in the wings to fill in at third, short, second that are bat first guys. So I don't think you can afford to just dump bats right now because you can't afford to sacrifice even a portion of the season with like let me give you an example. Let's say you go into the season, Casas isn't ready, Campbell hasn't proven himself yet. Let's say you dumped Yoshida, an outfielder goes down. Now you're filling in DH with someone unproven. Hopefully by the middle of April, your fill in there can be Tristan Casas, and all it is just going to be one outfielder goes down or a DH goes down. One of those four spots goes down and you snap your fingers and Casas could come up and play. Actually, it would need to be two.
Yeah, it's quite a logjam. And again, this is a logjam. This is the same logjam that we've been talking about. Again, I'm not exaggerating. It has literally been two full years discussing this logjam that the Red Sox, for whatever reason, cannot seem to unjam. Another thing that's frustrating about the Casas kind of being stuck in AAA or wherever they're going to put him, the profile of Tristan Casas, what we think he can be, is exactly what the Red Sox need. Guy who gets on base a ton and hits for power. Full stop. So I agree with you, Gordo. I wouldn't dump Masataka Yoshida right now because of the scenario you laid out. But if there's a decent situation that crops up in the offseason, like let's say Yoshida plays really well in the WBC and there's a team that's willing to take on half of his contract without the Red Sox having to add much to it, I still think you do it. I still think the Red Sox should do it just because it has been such a headache to offload this guy, and it clears up a little bit of this endless logjam. Just a little bit. Not the full thing, but it's a start.
The other thing, too, is the logjam is obviously blocking Tristan, and then you have the whole Jaren thing, whatever else. Christian Campbell might hit his way into the lineup, too. Like, there's... Yep. That's a name that we talked about a little bit last episode, but like as of right now, he doesn't have a spot either. And that's a guy they've already extended and has shown a ton of promise in the minor leagues. So I'm not really worried about moving from Yoshida, whether it be a trade, DFA, whatever. But there's going to be some very uncomfortable decisions if both Tristan and Christian start to hit in AAA.
Yeah. And with Christian, this is why I feel like they're still maintaining that infield work. Like, because obviously you can make the argument that, oh, it's for the long term. Long term, they want to work him back in there because they see they've got all this outfield depth and they don't really have it in the infield long term. But to me, that also could be if everyone's hitting, if everyone's playing, and Christian Campbell needs a spot on the big league roster because he's playing so well, it's going to be much easier to find him at bats at second or third if his bat is worth it than it's going to be putting him in the outfield again. It's like, so here's a question for you guys. Lay out a scenario. Like, I'm trying to figure out a scenario, a realistic scenario where Tristan Casas gets back into this lineup by the beginning of May. How do we make it happen realistically?
Duran or Roman Anthony gets hurt. They call up Casas, prioritize him over Yoshida, either keep Yoshida on the bench or DFA him, just do something with him and make Casas the DH/first base with Contreras.
Yeah, I think it's going to have to be some kind of injury or by some miracle they're able to move Yoshida.
Is there a scenario where no one gets hurt that you think it would be possible for Casas to find his way here? Because like I keep thinking April baseball gets magnified so closely just because it's all we have to base anything off of. And if the Red Sox, let's say, were at April 25th and they are 26th in the league in home runs and they're a 500 team and it's like, wow, this team really is just, as we thought, a true power bat away from taking off, and Casas has like an 1100 OPS in AAA. Is there a scenario, and we're going to put Masataka Yoshida aside in this conversation, is there a scenario, like, is it even possible that they would sit one of those outfielders down to give Casas some runway at DH?
The only thing I could possibly see is maybe they shift Duran to center and move, say, Don to second to clear up the DH spot. But that, you guys know how I feel about, say, Don playing anywhere other than center. I don't like that, but I could see the Red Sox doing it because they've shown a willingness to move, say, Don out of his position.
Yeah, it would have to be something like that, because if the offense is that bad, it's not unrealistic to think that Marcelo isn't hitting playing second. And if with Romy out, like, you're kind of going with what, IKF, Marcelo Monasterio, something like that. So, I mean, if you're absolutely desperate for offense, you have no other choice than what Sammy said. You're putting Sadon at second, you're putting Duran in center, and then your DH and Casas just to get some thump in the lineup. But at that point, like, that's all because you shot yourself in the foot at that point, because then your defense takes a massive hit. Mm-hmm.
This is a scenario in which you have to prioritize needs of the team over fit. Like, maybe Casas isn't fitting perfectly because he only plays first base or could DH, but you need power. So maybe you have to do the square peg in the round hole thing where you know, the scenario I just laid out, for example, you go all offense. Sorry, Sadon, you're out of center. You're at second now. Duran, you're in center field. You know, mixed reviews on that. And Casas, you're first base DH. Like, none of these are ideal, by the way. I'm not advocating for any of them. It's just, this is the situation the Red Sox are in. They're going to have to get creative. Or a trade happens out of nowhere that none of us see coming at a very unusual time, end of the offseason kind of thing, which I would put the odds of that at like 2%, maybe.
So I was thinking about this. You guys are about like 50% of where when I was thinking about this the other day, where I got to. Because I was like, okay, let's say they're not hitting and Casas is ready, or even Campbell. Like, one of just it, this scenario comes about if just one of them is proven that
Do
they Casas. Are ready.
It's Do Casas. Just,
it's the same. It's the same conversation, yeah. Regardless. Like, that, whoever it is goes to DH. I would say your best potential offensive lineup, like, you could make the argument that it's, let's say, Casas at DH, and your outfield is Roman, Duran, Abreu. You guys said Sadon to second base. To me, Sadon is a below average major league player if he's playing anywhere but the outfield, specifically center field. Like, I think you're a better offensive and defensive team if second and third base are Marcelo and Durbin than having Rafaela there.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, but it'd be left-handed heavy. It almost would be like you would platoon Meyer and Rafaela, even though Rafaela is better against righties than lefties. But you'd be protect. It would be essentially just like Meyer's your starter, but you're protecting him against lefties.
Let's see. Saidon at second. Yeah, he was barely ever so slightly above average at second. So I agree with you, Gordo. If he's not even giving you league average offense, and he's moderately, barely above average at second, I'd rather just go with a guy who's a better bet. This is such an ugly scenario we're laying out, though. This is what happens, yeah, when you're not aggressive and decisive, like you said you would be. You wind up with talking about, hey, maybe we have to put this center fielder, Saidon Rafaela, on the bench, even though he's already been extended and just won a gold glove. Like, it's ugly. Yep.
And the other thing that, and I, another reason why I think it was so important to clear the outfield logjam this offseason. I mean, if Christian Campbell, first of all, he looks like a different ball player right now, both mentally, and you can see it when he swings the bat. Like, he looks like a different guy, and clearly he feels more comfortable in the outfield than he did at second base last year. If he is what they think he is, you enter the offseason, or you enter when the second he proves that he's that, you now have a situation where you have five outfielders for three spots, none of them DHs, and we're, that's not even including Massa. Like, you can't enter the offseason needing to find good value for two of those guys. You're not going to get it.
And again, I'm going to say it for the third time. This has been going on for 3 years, 2 years, excuse me. Sorry, not that extreme. 2 years, and they still haven't figured out the jam. How is that possible? How crazy is that?
Kicking the can down the road, like, yes, you maintain flexibility, but in the end, there, if you kick it as far down the road as you can, more often than not, there are going to be opportunities that pass you by that are better than the end result, even though you maintained that flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Put that on a t-shirt. I can't remember what you said, but yes, I agree.
It's a little long for a t-shirt, but you could put it, I'll put it in my memoir.
Okay. In the Gordo memoir. Yeah, it's
all connected, though. Casas, Campbell, outfield, first base, DH, all of it.
Why do you guys think they're saying, because the word around camp is that Casas will be ready end of April or May-ish. If he's moving around well, like we saw in the video, and granted, it's just a clip, like what? I guess just getting up to speed,
Sammy,
offensively?
It's the same conversation as we had with Yoshida last year. Yoshida could have DH'd right away. Casas could probably DH early in the season. They're going to hold on to him and call it getting him back up to speed, when in reality, it's just keeping him ready to go for the second they actually need him. That's my theory.
That cannot sit well with Casas nor the other players in the clubhouse. If they know what's going on, they see the team that they're employed by operating that way. It's just, this is so, so painfully Red Sox.
It's going to be like Yoshida last year. Like, I'm sure, yeah, he could handle DH. He could play every day. But they're going to, quote unquote, ramp him up and just basically have him get reps in AAA to stay, you know, active and get reacclimated. When he, right now, I think he could play. He could play in spring training games right now, I think. Is it scummy? I don't know. I actually don't know if Tristan minds it, because he kind of not sung praises, but like, he acknowledged why the Sox had to go out and get Wilson Contreras. So I think hopefully it's like a chip on his shoulder and he goes out of AAA and it just kind of adds fuel to the fire. He starts hitting and forces his way back. But the whole thing just kind of sucks.
I think the one thing that we shouldn't ignore is the fact that he didn't produce when on the field last year. And obviously, like, if you've listened to this podcast at all, like, you know, I'm one of the biggest Tristan Casas truthers. Like, I think I have thought until he got injured with the torn patella tendon that this guy has 30 homers written all over him. That said, he didn't perform on the field last year and then had a potentially career altering injury. So it's not something where it's like, oh, if he's healthy, you're just going to snap your fingers and he's going to achieve the potential that even that the highest people on Tristan Casas thought he was going to achieve. Like, we don't know what the new version of Tristan Casas looks like. So they should make him prove himself. He has options. It'd probably be good for his health anyway to get games in spring training in AAA before getting him back to the majors. Like, obviously it's a jam-packed scenario and it's going to be likely an injury that needs to happen to get this guy at bats at the big league level, which obviously isn't ideal, but it is better than needing to force him into games because the season starts in April, but he's not ready. And to me, like, even though I love Tristan Casas, I think he's going to be great. He does need to prove himself again to the Red Sox, especially with the roster the way it is. And they're in position to force him to not only just prove himself, but prove himself for a pretty good period of time before needing to make any decisions.
We're also talking about a good thing here. We're talking about having too much talent. Like, that, it's a good thing. The, you know, Tristan in AAA, Christian, like, it sucks for certain people, but as a team and as an org, having that much quality depth is a good thing. It just sucks kind of where we're at because you have these really good players that are blocked by lesser players in certain areas.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, if I were the Red Sox, what would I need to see from Tristan Casas to feel good about him producing in the big leagues, coming back to the big leagues and producing? I feel like if I saw him hit for a week in AAA, I'm not going to be like, well, I need another week. Like, what's he got left? He's been good in the big leagues, way more good than bad. The way people talk about him, I think, is completely unfair, completely crazy. Gordo, we had a conversation earlier today comparing Tristan Casas and Roman Anthony, and if we would be content if Roman Anthony put up the same numbers as Tristan Casas as he did in his first full season. I'll read them off to you right now. So for Pat, this is for you. If Roman Anthony put up an 856 OPS and hit 24 home runs next year, how would you feel?
B plus.
You feel plus good about
for an 856? I feel like that's an A.
No,
that's
it's great. Really good. It is really good. But
either way, and that's what Tristan Casas did. And we had people calling in today on the radio saying, like, this guy's done nothing. He hasn't proven himself. And I'm like, all right, you can say he hasn't proven himself, but he hasn't done nothing. His current OPS right now is 800 on the dot for his full big league tenure. And that's about, you know, how many? That's 251 games. So, like, 1.5 seasons. Yeah, Gordo.
And that includes 29 games last year where he hit 182 with a 580 OPS. And we all remember his really slow start to 2023 when we were talking on the then Bradfo show about him. Oh, like Dustin Pedroia did this. You remember those conversations? Like, Dustin Pedroia started out slow. We have to be patient. We had those conversations with him. So he's had multiple. I'll find the exact numbers on that start. But he's
Mark
had
Teixeira.
Really slow starts.
Remember Mark Teixeira with the Yankees would hit like 145 every April? And I mean, I'll speak for myself. Red Sox fans would be like, oh, he's cooked. Teixeira stinks now. And then by the end of the year, he'd have 35 home runs and the OPS would be mid-800s and he'd win the Gold Glove. It was the same thing every time. Some guys start slow. Especially in Boston. Gordo, we were at that game, Red Sox Blue Jays, in April last year. Could barely feel my hands. It was so cold. Neither team could hit the ball. And people were criticizing the Red Sox, like, these guys can't hit at all. I'm like, dude, nobody hit. Nobody hit that entire game. Nobody hit that entire homestand. It's so cold. Nobody can play baseball in this weather. Yeah, Gordo.
Tristan Casas in the month of April, I included May 1st on this by mistake, but whatever, even more so. The month of April plus the first day of May. Hit 128 with a 563 OPS in 2023. So you take that stretch plus the stretch to begin last year before he tore his knee up. And his OPS for his career, his brief career, is still 800. Like, mm-hmm. The guy can hit. And to Sammy's point, if Roman Anthony did what Tristan Casas did in that 2023 season, which includes that first month that I just laid out there, you'd be pretty happy with it. Maybe it's not like, oh, this guy's is an MVP instantly, but oh my God, like, Roman Anthony's what, 22 this year?
Yeah.
Yep. I think he's turning 22. Here, let me check 22. When is Roman's birthday? We should get him a gift. 21.
He's 21, will be, May 13th.
Okay, so this is 22. His age 22 season.
So for Roman Anthony to do that at age 22, even though, like, we have like these inordinate expectations, fair or not, for this kid instantly. Like, if he did that, you'd be really, really, you'd be excited.
An 856 OPS. Let me give you some players who did not reach that. Just I'll name a few in 2025. Bobby Witt Jr. You guys might know this guy. Rafael Devers, Matt Olson, Vlad Guerrero, Junior Caminero, Bryce Harper. And there's a lot more. Kyle Tucker, Bo Bichette. I can go on. 856 would be outstanding. Like, that would be I'd be totally thrilled if Roman Anthony did that. And Tristan Casas has already done that.
Right. So this is like the point being, this is not a guy you should write off. I don't know how he finds his way to the bigs. It will happen at some point. And we're just going to have to, he's going to have to go get off to a quicker start in his big league season quicker than he did in 23 and last year. Mm-hmm. And 24, actually. He started off slow in 24 and he was turning it around, and that's where he had the rib thing. So really, he is a slow starter. So let's get him started in AAA, and then once he gets going there, you bring him up.
Every year, start Tristan Casas in AAA for a month. Crazy. Until he heats up.
But
go ahead.
That brings me just to another conversation that we had on the radio on the topic of Roman. So we were talking about the faces of Boston sports, and there were a bunch of calls. Like people were really into this conversation about Rob was trying to make the argument that Roman Anthony has a shot to supplant Drake, or to supplant the right word, overtake Drake May as the number one in Boston sports this year. Sammy and I disagreed with that. I think I'll start this off. Drake May is the number one. He's the face of Boston sports, and there's nothing really anyone can do this year to change that. Pat seems to disagree.
Well, I did not have him at one.
Wow.
There's two options. I have Drake May as number one simply because he is the quarterback of the Patriots and they just appeared in the Super Bowl. I think it is not a no-brainer, but close to a no-brainer to put Drake May at number one right now. Number Pat, two, who
wait,
I
hold
think,
on, hold on. Pat, who do you have as number one?
Okay. You said active players. I wasn't going off of like today. So Tatum, I have Tatum at one.
Well, that's fine. Yeah, that's the
right. I have Tatum one, Drake May two.
Do you guys agree that there's a big gap after Tatum or May, whichever one and two? There's a big gap between two and
it's
three.
It's one, two. Yeah.
Right? Why though? Okay. Why is that? Jaylen Brown is the third. Do we all agree with that?
Whoa, no.
Whoa.
Hold on. I'm thinking. I'd probably put Jaylen Brown third. There's a big gap because Jason Tatum is the face of the Celtics, like it or not, for whatever reason. I don't know why Jaylen Brown doesn't get the same amount of credit. I think Jason Tatum's a little bit better, but they're both great. Brown's the one who won the finals MVP. Doesn't matter. Jason Tatum's the face of the team. He's a champion. He is beloved in Boston. I think he is the clear two because he has not played in a while, and Drake May is the hot name in the streets right now. So that's why I have May one. Jason Tatum too. That said, it's not a big gap there. The big gap is between two and three, and that's where this conversation gets a lot more interesting.
Pat, so hold on. First, I want to back up. I want to take this step by step here. You have Tatum over Drake May.
Yes.
I want to give you my argument for Drake May, and then I want to hear your argument for Tatum.
Okay.
To me, I think quarterback in any city, in any sports city, just by being quarterback already puts you at a level. And then Drake May was second in the MVP, almost won the damn thing, and then took the Patriots to the Super Bowl. I think if you're playing at that level, unless you're LeBron James, it basically doesn't matter what you do. You basically can't overtake that as the most talked about, the face. Like, face doesn't even necessarily mean like best. It's just like when you think of that region, who comes to mind first? And I feel like right now it's Drake May.
Understood. I'm going Tatum just because longevity, he's been here longer. He's won a championship, All-Star Game MVP, All-NBA. Like, that to me just like kind of solidifies it. And I'd be curious to see how it would look if he was actually, you know, playing right now. But like, they're like 1A, 1B. Like, I'm not arguing strongly either or. They're very clearly 1 and 2.
Who was your third?
Pasta.
That's not crazy.
I was debating where to put him on my list.
I have. Go ahead.
Do you want my top five?
Give me the five.
Let's hear your top five. Start from one.
Tatum, Drake May, Pasta, Jaylen Brown, Charlie McAvoy.
Oh wow! Yeah, we're gonna have different lists here.
Wait. You have McAvoy fifth?
Yeah.
No.
Pat, you think Charlie McAvoy is more talked about in the city of Boston than Roman Anthony?
No way. Yes. Maybe today because of the Olympics. I just said the Olympics. The Olympics.
I have Roman six.
Okay. I would go Can I get my top five?
Yeah,
real quick. Drake May, Jason Tatum, Gap, Jaylen Brown, Pasta, Roman Anthony. I think that basketball is so much more popular than hockey that even though Pasta is elite in his sport and he's the face of the Bruins currently, I still think the second most popular player on the Celtics is more well-known, more popular overall.
Gordo, what was your top five?
So my top three was cemented. Drake number one, Tatum number two, Jaylen Brown number three. And I was stuck at four, five, and six, and we're only doing top five to start. So it was twofold. Who do I put at four and who do I leave out of the top five? So I'm gonna go one Drake, two Tatum, three Brown, four Roman Anthony, five David Pastrnak.
Okay.
That's fine. I don't even know if I would put – I'm thinking about McAvoy. I'm stuck on Pat saying McAvoy. I don't even know if he would make my top 10. I'm thinking if he did, he would be
– So the reason I say Chuck is because he is so talked about in NHL. Like, he is, like, so popular in NHL circles. And, I mean, Bruins fans, obviously. Like, he just has the popularity around the league. He has the notoriety. And he's been here longer. Yeah, go for it.
For those of us – because, like, let's – out of the four Boston sports, like, I follow the Red Sox like it's the only thing I think about. And I watch every Celtics game, like I watch every Patriots game. And I'm really into both those. I don't watch as much Bruins. Mm-hmm. Charlie McAvoy is a top what defenseman in the NHL right now?
Six.
Yeah.
Top, like, top six in the whole league?
Top yeah. 10. Yeah. He's like in the middle of the
10
top
for 10. Sure. You could argue top six, more than likely top eight.
Okay. What would you guys say in terms of – and maybe this is also a question to put out there for the masses. Anytime I ask people to rank their teams, everyone loves ranking their favorite teams. Not your favorites. For the popularity in the city of Boston, what is the order, do you think, 1 to 4 right now today?
Patriots, Celtics, Red Sox, Bruins, or Bruins, Red Sox? Red Sox, Bruins.
I was going to say Bruins, Red Sox. Top two. I think it goes Patriots, Celtics. And then it's like 3A, 3B. I think Sox and Bruins are kind of on the same playing field right now.
Yeah, baseball is more popular than hockey in the U.S., but this is like one of the top regions in the country for hockey. So it's a tough one. Either way, it's close.
I was going to have Patriots, Celtics, Red Sox, Bruins. But honestly, to me, I honestly thought Red Sox were closer to Celtics than they are to Bruins.
I'm more.
But that's also my warped world. Like, yeah. I'm in my own world here. Like,
I would go Red Sox 3. But also, one thing that we're getting away from is it's not all about talent in this face of the team, face of Boston conversation. Like, I think you can make an argument that the Jeremy Swayman is more talked about than Charlie McAvoy in Boston simply because he's the goalie. It's like the quarterback argument. By virtue of being the goalie, he's discussed all the time. Plus, he got the extension, Olympic team. Yeah, Gordo?
I was just going to say, I did have Swayman in my top 10. I didn't have McAvoy.
Okay, so who do you have 6 through 10?
Okay, starting at 6, just to start off at 6, I put Garrett Crochet.
Okay.
I found it weird that he wasn't in the top 5 after the season he had last year and after the game he had in the playoffs last year, but I couldn't justify put I think Roman Anthony is just more talk. Like, Crochet versus Roman, we all had Roman higher.
Roman, yeah.
Yeah, but Crochet
he's more talked about.
Crochet plays in one out of every 5 games. Like, he is elite as they come in terms of pitchers. But if you're a casual fan, if you miss one of his starts, there's a chance you don't see him play for like 2 weeks. So that hurts him. I have Crochet at 7. I have Christian Gonzalez at 6, just because the Super Bowl run, football being so popular, et cetera, et cetera. But that, you know, I could be swayed to change that one.
I had Gonzalez at 7 after Crochet. Pat, who'd you all have? Right.
Wait, Gordo, what are the spots?
My fifth was Chuck.
What do you mean the spots? He has the spots. Who did you leave out? You had Roman Anthony at 6. You said that, right?
Yeah. So we're all actually pretty similar in that, like, 6 through 8 there. Because I have Roman at 6, Gonzo at 7, Crochet at 8.
So we're all super similar, except for the fact, outside of the fact that we had different number ones, but Pat inserted Charlie McAvoy when Sammy and I just didn't have him.
9 and 10 is going to get interesting because I think we're all going to have different players at 9 and 10.
Okay, what are we at now? So, all right, let's do a quick review before we get to the last two. We all agree the top two is a combo of Tatum and Drake May, whichever one you think goes first. 3-4-5, I think we all agree, other than the Charlie McAvoy part, is Pasternak, Roman, in whatever order.
Jalen
Brown.
Yeah, some assortment there.
I would go Jalen, Roman, and Pasta in...
You went Jalen, Pasta, Anthony, and I went Jalen, Anthony, Pasta.
I would go Jalen, Pasta, Anthony. Yes, that's what I would do. And then, the only really big outlier for the top five is McAvoy. And I don't even think it's that crazy.
So then, I think this is going to get interesting. And we might all have the same. 9 and 10, Gordo, who do you have?
Well, we haven't even done my 8.
Oh,
because
right.
We did 8 for you because of McAvoy. My 8th after Gonzalez was Derek White.
That's a good one.
Okay.
Is there anyone on the Red Sox who can make an argument for being in the top 10 other than Crochet and Roman?
No.
I did it.
I think there's one guy.
I put him at 10, but we'll get there.
Okay.
Pat, Sammy, who did you have at 8? Because Pat,
I had Crochet at 8.
You had Crochet at 8. Okay. I had Derek White at 8. Sammy?
I think I would go Swayman at 8, Derek White at 9, and then I have a Red Sox player at number 10.
Pat, who's your number 9? Because I had...
My 9 is Derek White. My 10 is Jeremy Swayman.
I thought you said Devers.
I thought he said Devers, too.
No, come on, bro.
Check him out.
Derek White at 9, Swayman at 10.
Okay, so we have the same two guys. I said 8 and 9. Go ahead, Gordo.
Yeah, I had White 8, Swayman 9, and I had Jaren Duran at 10.
Same. I have Duran at 10. I think Duran's super popular.
So really, we had the same exact list for the most part, except I didn't have Duran. I had Chuck. And you had Chuck high.
Yeah. We had like some slight back and forth swaps. Like, Pat, you had Crochet at 8, and I had him at 6. And I think outside of the McAvoy thing, that's like the furthest apart anyone came on this list.
I thought about Diggs, and I was like, no way.
There were close ones too.
Milton Williams, the only other Patriot I think you could.
Milton Williams, I thought of, yeah.
I wouldn't do it though. Pritchard, he gets talked about a lot, and fans really, really like him, but I just couldn't justify putting him above the talent levels of some of the guys at the end. Sammy?
I got one, and this one kind of got derailed over the last month or so of the season, but what about Will Campbell?
Talked about for bad reasons.
Yeah, I feel
like... I know, but like before he got hurt, when he was dominant and he was given those banger quotes that Pat loves, and he's like, I'll die for my quarterback. Like, he's pretty well-liked.
But he's an offensive lineman, though. It's like...
Yeah, it's tough.
Throughout the game, those guys don't get highlighted unless it's something bad.
You know what I think would be super interesting? Because I think we would have very different lists if we involved coaches.
I was actually going to bring it there, but before we get there, I think Joe has a list too, and I want to see how similar producer Joe's list is to ours. So we're bringing him in here. Joe, I want you to read your list 1 through 10 because there's more intrigue on the back end than the front end.
Okay, I'll tell you 1 through 5 is pretty much the same. May, Tatum, Pasta, Jalen, Roman. That's my 5 right there.
Okay.
And then this is where it gets tricky. I would probably say Crochet 6. I would say Gonzalez 7th, Christian Gonzalez. And then I would probably say Derek White, Swayman, and I'll actually put Jaren Duran in there. I know a lot of people who really, really like Jaren Duran.
I'm the only one who put Chuck in. That fascinates me.
He's my 11. He's right outside for me.
Yeah, Pat, I had him written down as like a potential for the last one, and then I didn't put him in. Joe's list was mine exactly, except he swapped Pasta for 3 and Jalen Brown at 4.
Which is what I had.
Right.
Interesting.
Wow.
See, who got snubbed? Like, closest would be, for my list, Charlie McAvoy. Pritchard, it would be close, but I wouldn't put him in.
You could argue Diggs.
Yeah, Diggs is close, but yeah.
Wait, can I ask you guys a question? There's been a lot of really good Boston athletes shipped out of town or left in the last 365 days. Like, Where would Devers have been on this list? Would Al Horford have made the list? Would either have Porzingis or Holiday have made the list? I don't think either of the last two would have. Devers would have.
Devers would have. He would have been the face of the Red Sox. I don't think Horford
would have. Devers would have.
You don't think who would have, Pat?
I don't think Horford would have. Devers absolutely would have.
Pat, who was your number 10?
Swayman.
Okay, you wouldn't put Horford over Swayman. Sammy, would you put Horford over Jaren Duran?
No, right behind him.
Yeah, I feel like I'm trying to convince myself. Where would Bregman be?
You know what helps?
Oh, forgot about Bregman. Jeez. The only time this year I'll do that.
If Bregman stayed, I think he would have been comfortably in that
5-6 spot.
Hey, Gordo, for the Horford argument, big Dominican population in the Boston area. That helps. It makes him unique.
It does. And Celtics fans obsessed with Al Horford.
Yeah.
Horford would win my 10.
Where would Brad Marchand be?
Oh, man.
Wow, this list.
He definitely would have been top 5.
Yeah.
Out of all
just
of the guys,
just on longevity.
Out of all the guys on this list, the only player that I would say added himself to the list in the last 365 days is Roman Anthony. Like, out of all the other guys we mentioned, Drake, Tatum, Brown, Pasta, Crochet, Gonzo, White, Swayman, Duran, McAvoy, all of those guys. Maybe Gonzo wasn't there.
No, Crochet a year ago hadn't pitched a game for the Red Sox.
Okay, you're right. You're right.
And also May had only done, what, a dozen games? He didn't even start the season.
He would have been in the lower half. He would have been the lower half.
He would have been like 10th, 9 or 10. Yeah.
Tatum would have been number one for sure.
Very interesting time for this conversation because Amica Insurance just released a Jason Tatum commercial of him playing basketball.
Dude, this Tatum thing is weird, man.
It's all planned.
March 1st, baby.
Yep, I'm with you, Joe. March 1st. It's all planned. Come on. They bumped the game to a national game. Everyone's talking about it. There's commercials. He's posting shit. He's coming back. And the Celtics are going to be so good. It's going to be great. But anyway, I have another name that we could maybe. Nah, this is a snub.
Where would Bregman have been? Where would Bregman have been?
That, like,
we didn't touch that.
When? 6-8 spot.
I think he'd be 10. He would replace Duran.
I would probably have put him ahead of Swayman, but behind Derek White. Which just speaks to where the Celtics are.
I think he would have knocked Swayman off, and I would have put him just below Roman. So he'd be like 7 on my list.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. Maybe. It's tough because his tenure was so short. Like we would have been talking about, he's only been here a year.
But if he was on like a 5-year deal and we knew he was going to be here, I think he would be.
Crochet and Roman Anthony have also only really been here a year. I know Roman like has technically been in the organization, but most fans have only really known him for a year.
Fair point. But they're clearly making a push to make Roman like the face of the team. And then Crochet's 1 year was god tier.
Yeah.
Whereas Bregman's was very good, but not holy shit. Maybe the MVP kind of like.
Yeah. I'd be curious. Where would coaches would slot.
Yeah, we should. How many of the four coaches would make your top 10 list, would push someone off of this list?
I think just Vrabel and Mazzulla.
Yeah, same.
Same. But okay. That
Cora is borderline. Cora would Cora's be borderline.
Like that,
10.
Like honorable mention territory.
Yeah, he's close.
Borderline, but he's not. Like Vrabel is constantly doing media because the sport is structured differently. He's not working every single day. He doesn't have a game every day. So he's able to do more media. He's making podcast appearances. He gets bloodied in the practice field. People love that. And then Joe Mazzulla, I don't need to explain why he's popular. He's crazy.
I think I'd put Vrabel at like 5.
Yeah, me too. I might put Vrabel at 3, dude.
I was thinking 2 or 3.
He's unlike Mazzulla. He like obviously he coaches in the biggest, most followed sport. We all said Patriots won. On top of that, he also has like the legacy to his name. Like people remember him, the player, and he's a coach now. Which like it could be Cora the same way, but Cora was never like a star here like Vrabel was. But like that alone, I'm dead serious. Vrabel is definitely top 5. You could argue number 3.
I would go Drake, Tatum, Brown, Vrabel, which says a lot, by the way. Like he's just that beloved. And with Joe Mazzulla, who I would also put in the top 10, I think he would, if you included Vrabel, I would put Mazzulla ahead of Swayman, which would put him number 10. So he would take over for Durant and Swayman. With Cora, like he's a good enough manager slash coach, whatever you want to say. He's good enough to be deserving of consideration there. But like Joe Mazzulla is a lunatic and Mike Vrabel is just beloved for so many reasons, like past, present, like the stuff like getting bloodied on the field, the clips of him in the locker room. We just get more of that from the Patriots, and maybe Cora could become more of a household name if we got a little bit more of that from the Red Sox. But the truth of the matter is it has so much to do with the fact that he is the NFL team's coach and they're just more popular than the Red Sox.
Cora's got to start making dick jokes like Vrabel does. That's how you win the hearts over of the fans.
Lever six.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Lever six jokes, chopping off your member.
Or just be an absolute psychopath like Joe Mazzulla.
Or do what Vrabel does. Cora, get in the box, wear a pitch machine pitch off the jaw, get bloodied out of the mouth, and then give a speech to the team with the blood pouring out and be like, we need to be ready to die for this team. And then he's instantly famous.
Yeah, or just like adopt and domesticate a family of raccoons like Joe Mazzulla would.
Yeah, something crazy. We need Cora to do something completely insane without harming anyone, by the way. We're not advocating for that.
We'll get PETA back on our ass again.
Actually, said he should wear a pitch off of the mouth.
Oh, God.
So remember, maybe.
Different episode. We should do top 10 active hated athletes.
In the city of Boston?
Yes. Like not in Boston.
Oh, hated by like Jazz Chisholm.
Yeah, yeah.
My list would be like Kyrie Irving and then 9 Yankees players.
Oh, Nazem Kadri.
Cam Schlittler.
No, Joe. Ben Rice is the guy I hate the most.
Kyrie.
At least Cam Schlittler gives you some like fun trash talk. Ben Rice looks like I've told you that. I think he looks like a hall monitor.
Cam Schlittler would, if you asked Red Sox fans, would definitely be the number one most hated Yankee right now.
Oh, yeah. I'm saying for me. I hate Ben Rice way more. Just because of his fucking face I hate.
What percentage of Red Sox fans would say Aaron Judge? I feel like 30. I feel like it's even lower. I don't hate Aaron Judge.
Yeah, I don't really hate Aaron Judge. He's so like blah.
I said it on radio last week. I'm annoyed at how likable he is.
Yeah, that's how I feel too. It's annoying, but like you can't change it. He is who he is.
Who do you think would get more votes in that specific vote? Judge or Jazz Chisholm? Because I think Jazz would get more votes than Judge.
Jazz.
I think so too. Yeah, Jazz.
Yeah.
Jazz. Well, I mean, he might get to that point where he's so good when he hits 50 home runs and steals 50 bases this year and gets a $35 million a year contract that people might just respect him so much. So
the thing is, we say this expression like every episode because we kind of are this, but are we too close to the forest to see the trees on this? And like the truth of the matter is, most Red Sox fans don't follow it super closely, so who they would say is like the number one player on the Yankees, and that's Judge and not Jazz. Because like for me, I hate Jazz way more than I hate her. I don't hate Aaron Judge. So
I think it's a different conversation if you're talking about specifically Red Sox fans or just Boston fans. Because if you're a Boston fan and you divide your viewership up among the teams, then I think that Judge is the default because he's the face of the Yankees and you got to dislike the face of the Yankees. But if you're locked in and you're seeing the shit that Jazz Chisholm says and seeing the shit that Cam Schlitter is saying and Ben Rice, the hall monitor, then maybe you have different guys than Aaron Judge that you hate.
Across all sports, who do you think would win that vote? The number one spot. Would it be Kyrie?
I think Kyrie
is the default. So
he's my number one. I put him over every Yankees player. Yeah.
He's my number one most hated athlete, any sport, any time period of my life. Like he would be number one. So for me, it's clear. I do think he would be number one overall for everyone else too.
Yeah, that's Mahomes actually would get votes, but I do think it would be Kyrie.
I don't hate Mahomes Kelsey at all. Would get more votes than Mahomes.
Yeah,
I'd give more votes for him than.
I think Mahomes. I agree with you, Joe. I think Kelsey. Yeah.
No one hates Mahomes. No one hates Josh Allen. Like I don't think Josh Allen would get votes because I love Josh Allen.
Yeah, it's true. That's coming.
Joe's right. He's annoying. He's Mr. If Man. But Mahomes, I don't dislike at all. I feel like Mahomes just makes Tom Brady look even greater because everyone's talking about how amazing Patrick Mahomes is. In the end, he's not even going to come close to doing what Brady did.
You guys want to hear
spin zone for you?
here before we get to enough said, what Alex Cora said about Jaren Duran after the game. He said he seems like a different hitter. He did put some good swings on balls today. Sammy, he hit a couple of big, I think they were both doubles. And I was thinking to Mike, because we had a whole thing on the radio.
First
today.
One almost went out. Yeah, Pat. So Pat and Joe, you might have missed this. I said on the radio that I think Duran might tap into more power hitting third because he's going to be hitting with guys on base and he'll see different pitches, better pitches to hit, more power. Brian Abraham added that there's also a different mental aspect to hitting third compared to first. Bradfoe ripped me to shreds for this. He said it was a stupid take. It was bad. He's like, you're not just going to change. I'm not saying he's going to hit 40 home runs. I'm saying he might inch back into the low to mid 20s. That's all I'm saying. And almost hit one out in his first at bat today. I would have gone nuts.
Oh, I would have been so funny.
Super close, super close. But that's, yeah.
I thought you said he was hitting 50.
Yeah, 50. It got changed from 20. What did I say, 23?
You said 23. By the end of the show, it was 50.
Oh, yeah, baby. 50 yeah. Home run, Jaren. He is yoked. Look at his arms.
He is pretty jacked.
He's always been yoked.
That's true. No, but that's what I'm saying is he's going to change. His approach is going to change because he's going to see better pitches. Roman Anthony's going to be on first base every time Duran's up, and that pitcher is going to be thinking, man, I don't want to walk this Jaren Duran guy and have two men on base. I better throw him something right down the middle. Duran's waiting for it. 493 feet.
All right, let's get to some Nuff Said. Does anyone want to go first? I have to figure out enough said because I forgot to prepare one. Actually, so I've got one, but I'll wait. Go ahead, Sammy.
So I have one kind of similar to the conversation we had earlier in the show, and we're talking about would we be happy if Roman Anthony put up the same numbers that Casas put up in his first big league season? I want to lower the bar even more to see where we're at and also display just how high the expectation is for Roman Anthony. I put out a poll 2 hours ago. I said in 2026, if Roman Anthony plays a full MLB season and posts exactly an 800 OPS, how would you feel? So that's my question to you guys. Let's say he plays 150 games, 800 OPS. That's probably 20-something home runs. Is that acceptable or would you guys be disappointed?
I mean,
for a guy in his first full year, I'd be okay with it.
Well, that's the discussion here is like in general, it's like, oh, it's his first full season. He has an 800 OPS. That's sick. But at the same time, the Red Sox have put the offense in a position where he needs to be the one to carry him. And if he's got an 800 OPS, like that's a good season, but he didn't carry him. And add the fact that he had an 850 something OPS last year, like a 940 something OPS. If you take out his first 20 games, like he's capable of more than that. So to me, like it's unfair, but I'd be a little bit disappointed.
Okay,
800.
Gordo, I hear what you're saying. We all agree, like you just said, it's unfair to have an expectation for him to carry the team because he's 22. It's his first full season. Let's just talk about in a vacuum. Like if we're looking back on this season and we say Roman Anthony in his first full year, he had a 800 OPS. No context of how the rest of the team did or where they finished. Just 800 OPS, first full season, age 22. How would you feel about that?
Hold on. Sorry, I spaced out. Say all that again.
Take out the context of the rest of the team is what I'm saying. Like, let's forget about the rest of the team just in a vacuum.
I wouldn't be disappointed, but I wouldn't be like super pleased or anything. It'd just be kind of 50th percentile.
Like, content. Right, yeah. You'd be like, nice. Like, that was good.
Yeah. I think I would say 800. I would say like good season. Like nothing incredible, just a good, solid, like a B. Encouraging, everything else. Once he gets to that 825-ish, you're talking, you know, B plus, A minus, and then anything over like 830 is like a slam dunk. Great season.
Yeah.
The Sox had five players last year with OPSs over 820. It's also OPSs over 800. Bregman, Romy, Ref Snyder, Roman, Devers, but only one of those players played the full season. Actually, none of those players played the full season when you factor in injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just I just want to ask to illustrate how ridiculous and not in a I'm not saying this in a derogatory way. It's just the expectation for Roman Anthony is crazy. I had people saying 850 is the floor. And I had people saying that would be disappointing if he only put up an 800 OPS. Like, we have to remember, it's a 22-year-old kid playing in Major League Baseball. 800 OPS is very good. What did? Here's a good example. Jackson Merrill, who in his first full season, he put up an 826 OPS. This year, he put up a 774 OPS. That's how hard Major League Baseball is. A kid who looked unstoppable, 4.5 WAR player, follows up next year with a, you know, good but not amazing season.
And with that 820-something OPS season, he was objectively bad for the first, like, 2 months of that. Like, he was unstoppable the second half of the season, and then the second season was pretty underwhelming.
Right. Another really good comp is Corbin Carroll. Corbin Carroll's rookie year, 155 games, led the league with 10 triples, 25 home runs, 76 RBI, and he had an 868 OPS. Sophomore year, played in 158 games, hit 14 triples, but he hit 231 with a 750 OPS. Mm. So I don't think Roman has that big of a fall off. And 750 OPS is by no means like terrible.
Solid. But
it's also, you have guys who are like now MVP candidates year in and year out who do kind of, you know, fall back a little bit sophomore year before they kind of fully get their footing. So anyone saying anything less than 850 is a failure is insane.
Yeah, 850. If he had an 850 OPS, that is an A+ in my book. Oh, that my is God. Unbelievable. And by the way, that on the 800 on the dot kind of conversation, these guys all below 800, Jacob Wilson, Vinny Pasquantino, Julio Rodriguez, Mike Trout, Manny Machado, Christian Yelich, like 800 is very, very, very good. Gunnar Henderson also.
A lot of those guys had down years though. Like, you're naming big names that we all, that last year we felt like Gunnar Henderson, everyone's like, he had a shit season last year.
Yeah, Gunnar's a bad example. But those are that's a lot of players who had productive seasons. Wilson Contreras, who the Red Sox just got, 791. Jaron Duran below. Brendan Donovan. Elly De La Cruz. Like, there's a lot of guys. Torkelson. All productive. Torque. Very, very good players. Did not reach that 800 OPS mark.
Pat, you got enough said?
Of course I do. Shout out U.S. men's hockey. Shout out U.S. women's hockey. Mm. Our fourth best sport as a country is winning double gold. So shout out the boys. Shout out Jack Hughes. Shout out, you know, both Hughes. I'll shout out only Brady Tkachuk. I won't mention the other one. Sway, McAvoy. That was like the most fun I've had watching a hockey game since like the Bruins were in the Cup. Like that game was, it was just a full adrenaline dump for 3 hours. It was awesome. So shout out the boys. U.S. wins gold again, first time in 46 years.
I have a take about U.S. sports, and I think this backs it up. This U.S. win backs it up. My belief is that the U.S. could be number one in any sport they want if they just put money into it. And in 2013, I forget, someone had a tweet in 2013 where they were saying, better watch out, the under 12 and 13 or whatever age group finally had 100,000 people sign up. U.S. is really funding the hockey program now. They're going to be good for the 2026 Olympics, which is a crazy call. You guys will see the tweet. It's everywhere. But that's my point, is if the U.S. puts money into soccer, for example, I bet in 20 years they would be the number one soccer country in the world. It's just that's how ingrained into society sports are in this country.
Well, it's like population plus money equals.
Exactly.
There you
exactly.
Go.
Simple. This is our miracle. This is our miracle. They had it in 80, taking down the Soviets. We had it taking down the Canadians.
And then, if there was money in Major League Soccer, like if Major League Soccer players made baseball player money or even hockey player money, do you know how good the U.S. would be in, again, like 20 years from now? They'd be unbelievable.
Yeah. And we'll get a real test. See if hockey is our fourth best sport, because the World Baseball Classic is starting up, and for the first time in my life, maybe not Sammy's, they're actually trotting out a respectable roster. Like, stars are actually playing.
Especially the pitchers.
Scoobal and Skeens are going to be pitching to plumbers from the Czech Republic. That's unfair.
Don't forget the literature teachers too, Pat. Got some good teachers, some plumbers.
Yeah.
Pat, you've been alive for all of the World Baseball Classics. What are you talking about?
Yeah, no.
Oh, he got you. Just,
yeah, yeah.
Any excuse, though.
But, people forget how bad. That's disrespectful. The last roster wasn't bad. The pitching was very subpar. Like,
buddy, I went.
Their three best pitchers in that tournament were Lance Lynn, Merrill Kelly, Adam Wainwright.
That's like, that when I went, I saw two games and it was Adam Wainwright and Merrill Kelly were the two starters.
Dude, Lance Lynn should be on every Team USA. Nobody looks more Team USA than fucking Lance Lynn.
Yeah.
He looks like America. Also, I was like hardcore rooting for USA hockey because it felt like they were underdogs against Canada and Canada always beats us. The World Baseball Classic, I'm still deciding, like, do I want Team USA or do I want the team that has like the most Red Sox players on it to win? Because the Team USA should just dog walk everyone other than Dominican Republic and Japan.
Actually, why is Japan so... I never understand it. Like, I understand they played together more, but like, seriously, does it have that much of an impact in baseball where it like largely is such a you versus me, pitcher versus batter sport? Like, how does that matter as much as it
sleeping on
does?
Japan? Sleeping on Japan?
No, you shouldn't. Like, they're objectively awesome every time in this thing. I just don't get why.
I don't know. I'm rooting for Team USA. I'm just not going to be like, let's go, baby. We did it. Like I was today, because they should win this. Like, respect to Dominican Republic. I think their number two starter is Brian Baio. Like, that's not Paul Skeens, Tarek Skubal, Joe Ryan, whoever else. Who's the other? McClain.
Yeah. Yeah, because Sandy's pitching for DR. Bayo's pitching for DR. Is Framber?
I don't know. Sanchez is like their big, scary guy.
Yeah, yeah. Sanchez is disgusting.
But him, I would almost put in that Skeens and Skubal territory. He's going to be holy crap, most underrated pitcher in the world.
They have. You're right. It's really not that good of a pitching staff. They have Luis Severino. They have Christopher Sanchez. They have
the lineup is great.
Yeah, like they've got a solid bullpen, like Carlos Estevez, Camilo Duvall, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Dennis Santana, Greg Soto, Edwin Uceda. Lineup's crazy. But all right, my enough said. Roman is never going to live the catch-up thing down.
Yeah.
He wants it. He wants to be done with it. Like,
we're done with it. We're not going to bring it up.
We're not fueling the fire anymore, but he keeps hearing about it. And on the MLB social post, they had like this little cool thing where it's like, we're having star players like, hi, I'm this guy and I'm passing the phone to someone who does this. And Cal Raleigh's was, hi, I'm Cal Raleigh and I'm passing the phone to someone who hates ketchup. And it goes to Roman Anthony, who, by the way, it was weird. He's like, I'm passing the phone to the best defender in the league. And it goes to PCA. And it's like, okay, we got there. You're going to make, because they wrote it. Like, MLB wrote it.
Yeah.
You're going to make Roman say that and not go to Sadon? Like, that. I mean, PCA is probably a little bit better, but still, don't make Roman say it.
I think we got to have like a formal written apology for Roman when we go down. Yeah, we did not expect it to blow up like that.
No. He said it. No apologies here. He said it.
We didn't bait him. We asked him for a hot food take, and he said he wants ketchup exterminated, which is a good answer. And it's not; it shouldn't be seen as a punishment. Like, it was funny. It's personality. Yeah.
Where's all the MLB content of Garrett Whitlock asking us how to milk a nut?
It's true. That was good.
Good times. I can't
wait for also, Gordo, before you wrap real quick, Minov said, everyone stay safe from the blizzard. Everyone hunker down. Get your food. Get your water. And listen to the Red Sox, because your boy's going to have to drive into the studio to go produce it.
Oh,
gross. Yikes.
I love blizzards. I'm so excited. All right. This will be great.
Enough of this. I wish it was dark. It is almost May. You have to be over this.
You know what would make this better is if it were dark at 4 o'clock. I would be so happy.
That's going to do it for episode 324 of Play Tessie. Thanks for tuning in until the last minute of this thing. Subscribe, rate 5 stars. Don't look at Sammy.
I'm kissing. I'm like a vampire.
Yeah. Get Sammy off this podcast.
Joe, replace me. Take my spot.
Subscribe, rate 5 stars. Follow us on the socials at PlayTessie, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. We'll be back in a couple of days. We'll be starting our AL East outlooks. That's not for the next one, though. That's on Friday. And we'll be previewing all the other teams in the AL East. Orioles, Jays, Rays, Yankees, all of them. We'll be talking in depth about those once a week until the season starts. That's right. We're basically in the 4-week territory, getting to opening day. So we're really getting close. We'll be back in a couple of days, though. Till then, for Sammy, for Pat, for Joe producing, it is Gordo here for Playtesty episode 324. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.